This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is an opportunity for you to send your questions to us via email, radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the way you get to send your questions. And today, I'm partnered, as usual, with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. And together, in tandem, we'll answer your questions as we work together in the Hoffman Center in a complimentary fashion. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I must say that this is a week where I'm on staycation. I'm actually on vacation, but I'm on staycation. And I figure, you know, I live in Manhattan, so I have, like, what's the equivalent of a very, very expensive hotel room. It's like an Airbnb in Manhattan. I have all my clothes there. I have all my cooking utensils. It's fully equipped, and it's great because within you know, a short radius of where I live, I can go to Broadway. I can go to museums. I can go. I actually spent some time at the 9/11 museum, the memorial at Ground Zero.
Which is the first time.
You know, 15 years now, right?
I can't believe it's been that long.
Almost 15 years. And so this is the first time I went down there. And I have to say, they did an extremely impressive job.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. It's every citizen of the, shall I say, civilized world should go down there and see that. Because it is a true monument to the resilience of a country like America. Is after a terrible, terrible disaster, what they did, the acts of kindness, the acts of engineering, the engineering feats, the cooperation, the architecture, the design, the tasteful tributes to the people who unfortunately, you know, went to work that day. I mean, just like you or I, you know, went to work that day thinking nothing, you know, nothing, and then experienced this terrible tragedy. But it's amazing. I recommend it very highly. And, you know, like you, there are a lot of Manhattanites who just, you know, we don't get around to doing our sightseeing in our own town. And then I would also I also got to Broadway. And I saw The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night, which is the Tony Award-winning play about a young boy with autism. Now, that doesn't sound too palatable. That's, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's a downer, that's a turnoff, I'm not going to go see that.
That's drama. That's wonderful.
It is exquisite drama, exquisite performance, innovative theater, and you really get into the head of what it is to be to have that type of consciousness. And they really treat it that way. They treat it like it's not like a mental retardation. It's a different type of consciousness.
Yeah.
And the difficulty that regular people have in communicating with him, and he in turn with them. And I posted it on Facebook, and I read one comment from one person who said, oh, you know, it was too much. I had to leave because they had someone in the family with autism. And I think that's sad because, you know, it was too close to home for them. But I really recommend it for teachers, for psychologists, anyone who has whose family is touched by that situation, because it's important. It's it's you know, Broadway is a lot about, you know, entertainment, beautiful, you know, staging and singing and performances. But this one really had a really created sort of a thoughtful.
Was it a musical, or was it just drama?
No, it's a drama, but it's also a drama that has very innovative stagecraft.
Okay.
So there, you know, it's hard, you know, except through dialogue, to portray emotion, but there were actually scenes where they really tried to demonstrate what was happening inside this boy's head, and they did it in an artistic fashion. They rendered it amazing.
I really want to go see that.
Yeah,
now.
It's important, so I would recommend it highly. In the news this week, the headline appeared in NBC News, and I posted it on Facebook, and it says, headline, more people should get statins, report finds.
Whose report finds?
There was this new study that said that there were these new guidelines which cast a wider net, saying that not just people with high cholesterol should be on statins, but people who have cardiovascular risk. Well, I personally took the test, and I'm at very low cardiovascular risk, and it almost said, like, you need to take a statin. So it's a test. It ropes more people in. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like it's gamed to virtually any African-American male. That's, you know, almost 100%. Anybody who's carrying a couple extra pounds, virtually, you know, anybody with a, you know, it's just too much. But anyway, what they did is they tested it out and they validated it and they said it's, quote, cost-effective to put all these people on statins because we'll save more lives.
But did they discuss the side effects at all?
No. There was a conspicuous absence of discussion of side effects. Now, here's a companion story that got much less play because this NBC didn't report on this. This is from Medscape, which is a medical publication.
Yeah.
Statins linked with aggression in women, but curiously not in men. So what's up with that?
We're built differently. I don't know. Maybe we need more cholesterol than you.
Yeah, no, there is something to that because what I also notice is that, my tagline on that when I post it on Facebook is another reason not to prescribe cholesterol drugs to women. And one of the reasons is that it appears that high cholesterol in women is less associated with cardiovascular disease. Now, I'm not here to say that women don't get heart attacks and strokes, but it's more associated
with... They get it more than breast cancer.
Absolutely, and it's a big problem. But it's much more associated with metabolic syndrome, overweight, prediabetes. A better test might be your hemoglobin A1C or glucose tolerance test. Yeah. So we see many women here with cholesterols 270, 290, 310, with an HDL that's usually sky high, you know, 70, 80, 90, or over 100. And when we test them, they have zero plaque. They have no coronary plaque.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing with aggression is, I mean, you know why. The brain. The brain is made of cholesterol.
We need it. We absolutely need it. And there is a study that says that women will have more of a tendency to get diabetes on a statin.
Yes. That's the other reason.
And there's the cause of, the beginning of heart
disease.
That's
precisely
the
reason.
That whole downward spiral.
This phenomenon of developing diabetes in women is more sex-related, less common in men, so it seems that women are more susceptible to that effect. In one study, it was 30%. In another study, alarmingly, it was 60%.
One of our gifts.
Right. But, the other take on that is that men are aggressive enough. You know, maybe maybe that just doesn't show up. You know, the little added aggression that the statins cause in men is barely noticeable because men are so aggressive to begin with. And women... You know, when you're trying to have a conversation in a loud restaurant, you know, you can't hear it.
Yeah.
But if you whisper in a quiet meadow, you can hear it. So maybe that little bit of added aggression is more noticeable in women.
Oh, that's funny.
Hey, we don't need more aggressive women.
Oh,
I don't know. Some people think we need more aggressive women. Women need to be more assertive. Well, aggression is not what we want. We want assertiveness.
Well, here's the problem, Dr. Hoffman. We
want
assertive people in general.
Right.
With men, it's called assertiveness. With women, it's called a different word. B word. And that's unfortunate.
So from one standpoint, this could be construed as a sexist story, is that
What's wrong with aggression? Maybe, you know, the aggression scale would be just normal for men, but this is called too aggressive for women.
So
that's interesting.
Women would climb the corporate ladder better if they were on a statin. They would also make less pleasant company.
Maybe. I would think so.
I'll take the... I think I'm in favor of that more pleasant company part.
There you go. Less statin use all around. I'm in favor of that.
It didn't say it curbed their assertiveness, though.
Okay.
Assertive, good.
Assertive,
aggressive.
Yeah.
Let me know when you're feeling better, and then reschedule your appointment.
Okay. Stop picking on me. Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
So anyway, so that's in the news this week. And also we have a very nice podcast that we posted recently with Dr. Raphael Kelman. He's written a book called The Microbiome Diet, which is a book about how your gut flora influences your weight. And he's gone into all the scientific studies that substantiate this notion, and we have a nice long discussion about that. And I might mention that we achieved a very, very significant milestone this week. And you are to be congratulated, Layla, because you've been part of our success story. We got word that we received news of our 1,000,000th download of our podcast.
Oh, my goodness.
1,000,000 downloads.
Wow.
So
we haven't been doing that this long, have
no,
we?
I mean, it's only been maybe less like a year and a half or something like
that. Wow.
So it's very gratifying that, you know, because here we are
that
sitting
is.
And we have no idea if anybody is listening. You know, it's like,
yeah,
there's like, you know, Charles is listening and Edna's listening. And there's like a handful. No, there's like a lot of people listening. And that's very gratifying.
That's terrific. So, wonderful.
So, you know, I might mention that, you know, we will, onward and upward, we want to continue getting the word out, and we'll continue bringing you what we hope is quality information. I really think that if people endeavor to listen to these podcasts as a series, you know, people who are dedicated listeners will get a very, I would like to think, balanced view of the world of integrative medicine and perhaps of medicine in general, and a pretty darn good increase perhaps in their health literacy, which I think is something that I really would like to work to enhance in America, because people, you know, simply, it's no longer an era where you just follow your doctor's orders, aye aye sir or aye aye ma'am, and click your heels, and you know, you need to be a wary consumer.
Yes.
There's so many drugs, so many procedures, so many options out there. And so we discuss those, and we hopefully will make our listeners more discerning about the options that they select. Not necessarily holistic options, because sometimes we're in favor of high-tech options.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, I will also put in this plug, which is that, you know, we do this. I enjoy it. You enjoy it. We love doing this. But, you know, it involves a lot of time and effort and expense to produce these podcasts. And let's see, if we charge like 99 cents, like Apple, you know, for each download, that would be like $1,000,000.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll split it with you. All right? Okay?
Yeah.
No,
but thank you.
No, but we're going to continue to make it free. But one thing that we ask of our listeners is that please consider helping yourself and at the same time helping to perpetuate these podcasts by considering shopping at the Hoffman Center store, where we provide supplements that I select for the patients, but also for our listeners, the highest quality supplements available. And, you know, you do yourself a solid, and you'll also help to ensure the longevity, not just of yourself, but also of this podcast series, and also, you know, the website, which is also a source of free information.
It's lots of articles there.
No paywall. It's like, it's free.
Yeah.
So
and do sign up to our newsletter, which is also free.
Free.
And I've got a wonderful note from Charlene. Thank you for the wonderful newsletter. We listen to your Saturday show, Dr. Hoffman, religiously. You are revered in our house. My mother and grandmother considered Dr. Carlton Fredericks their guru. They both lived to be over 100 years old. Thank you, sincerely.
Well, that's
Charlene.
That's very, very gratifying. I'd love to get positive feedback like that, and I'm glad that I'm a part of people's routine information, because there's so many competing sources of information that you know, we barely have time to imbibe it all. But you know, I try to make it germane. I try to make it interesting, and hopefully. So let us turn to our questions today.
Yes, we have a question from this is from Bo. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Is there a specific test to determine if I'm retaining water? My cardiologist felt around my belly. There was no water retention, but is there a test?
It's a little tough to ascertain that. You know, for to some extent, you can determine if you're retaining water by looking at your blood sodium levels. So if you have a very low sodium, sometimes that's an indication that you are retaining water.
Yeah.
You know, the water is diluting your bodily sodium. Mm-hmm. So that's sometimes an indication. The other thing is, you know, just a clinical exam. I mean, if you press usually the ankles and you mm-hmm. get a little indentation, you know, that's one sign that you're retaining water. There's also various measurement tests like a body composition analysis.
That would show that the percentage of water.
Percentage body water. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is a very frequent complaint of women. They feel bloated. They mm-hmm. feel they have water retention. They sometimes take diuretics. They become dependent on diuretics to maintain a
yeah.
certain sveltness. You know, they can tell. They can say, you know, I want to see my ankles. I want to see my hip bones. I want to see, mm-hmm. you know,
stop eating all those carbs. You'll shed some water too.
Exactly.
Carbohydrate has a water component to it. We're actually carrying more water when we're overdoing the carbs. So mm-hmm. just going on a lower carb diet, even to a moderate carb
right.
diet, if you were on a higher carb diet, you're going to shed a little water.
And you know from yeah. your experience working at the Atkins Center years ago, when Dr. Atkins was still alive, remarkable things happened. People would lose like 10, 12 pounds
yeah.
in a week.
Yeah.
Now, that's not, they weren't burning off fat.
Right.
Guaranteed that you can't burn off fat
right.
that fast.
No.
When you switch to a low-carb or a ketogenic diet, you just liberate a lot of
yes.
water.
Yes, we're shedding a lot of excess water, especially in the first 3 to 4 days. After about 4 days or so, then the fat burning begins.
And some of that's allergy bloat, too.
So, that is.
So
there is allergy bloat. That's
yeah.
right.
So if you have, like, if you're allergic to wheat,
yeah.
for example, you might have a water retention. I mean, there's mm-hmm. I wish I'd made up this aphorism. It's pretty funny. It's the solution to pollution is dilution.
Yeah.
In other words, if you have any kind of toxicity or allergy, your body wants to
dilute
the toxic insult,
mm-hmm.
and so you accumulate water to, as it were, dilute it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Thank you for your question, Bo. Let's see. This comes from Jack. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm an 83-year-old male. Part of my vitamin regimen is vitamin K2. I'm being treated for prostate cancer, and a recent bone scan shows a couple of small lesions in my back. My urologist prescribed XGEVA,
mm-hmm.
which, if I understand correctly, removes calcium from the blood and puts it back in the bones, just like vitamin K. Should I stop using my vitamin K now?
And the answer to that question is no. You know, there are a couple of circumstances where you might want to stop taking vitamin K. If you were placed on Coumadin because you're at risk for blood clots, which
mm-hmm.
some cancer patients are, then you don't want to neutralize the Coumadin with vitamin K. Although, under controlled circumstances, when the doctor is aware of what you're doing, you can sometimes fit in a little bit of vitamin K. By the way, vitamin K2 is recommended for prostate cancer. It's one of the nutrients that may have potentially anti-cancer effects.
Wow.
So, you know, now on a mechanistic level, vitamin K puts calcium in the bones,
mm-hmm.
and what this drug attempts to do is remineralize the bones
mm-hmm.
because there's sometimes Swiss cheese holes due to prostate cancer metastasis. And by the way, there's something about this drug that slows the development of metastases in the bones.
Wow.
So would vitamin K interfere with that? I would say vitamin K would not necessarily amplify it to the point where it would be dangerous,
mm-hmm.
nor would it interfere. I think it would be a perfect complement to XGEVA.
Okay.
So frankly, I hate to weigh in on
mm-hmm.
You know, medical situations and answer questions on the podcast about cancer, but this is one where I think we can say that the medical interactions, I mean
mm-hmm.
the drug-nutrient interactions, are favorable and not potentially harmful.
Terrific. All right, Jack, your vitamin K.
And by the way, you know, for Jack and for anyone listening who's coping with even advanced prostate cancer, I recommend very highly that you check out my recent articles on natural treatments for prostate cancer. I wrote about 20 supplements that are helpful for prostate cancer. And in a future article, I'm going to talk about diet, exercise, stress reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is all on the newsletter.
It's in the free newsletter,
yeah.
And it's also now on our website, so
mm-hmm.
check it out. The information is there. And here's the interesting thing about prostate cancer. Frankly, there are certain types of cancer where I cannot tell you with full assurance that taking certain vitamins is going to make that cancer slow down or go away. I mean, clearly, I mean, you've got some very, very aggressive cancers. If you have, like, sarcoma or if you have advanced melanoma, vitamins may have an influence somewhat on the progression, but, you know, it may be minor at best. But in prostate cancer, there is no question that certain vitamins and nutraceuticals and lifestyle measures, even in the most aggressive prostate cancer where you have metastasis throughout your body, could be beneficial. So, you know, we know that supplements may prevent cancer. I think that's acknowledged. Know, vitamin D and carotenoids and, you know, certainly healthy diet, maintaining weight, blah, 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 exercise. But if you actually already have cancer, now the studies are coming in that, well, you may need some types of conventional care, like in this case, Xgeva is, you know, going to slow bone metastases. Complementing that with natural methods makes total sense. Prostate cancer is a wonderful model for integrating natural with conventional. So that's
encouraging.
Studies are coming in left and right about that.
Wow. Best of luck to Jack.
And one in four men will get prostate cancer.
Yeah, wow. Okay. All right. Our next question comes from David. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, purveyors of raw cacao are saying that having chocolate raw in the form of raw cacao powder is much more beneficial, has more antioxidants, than the roasted cacao you normally get when you buy chocolate. Do you have an opinion on this? Now, here's the thing. When you normally buy chocolate, and you're probably buying milk chocolate, you're not just buying roasted cacao. Do you have an opinion on this?
Well,
or is this all marketing hype?
Well, first of all, it hasn't been totally worked out. But one of the things that even the commercial candy makers, Hershey's and Nestle's, they're working on what are like functional chocolates that maximize the beneficial polyphenols that have cardiovascular protective effects, anti-diabetes. I mean, think chocolate, anti-diabetes?
Wow.
Forget about it.
That's an oxymoron.
Right. But actually, if it doesn't contain a lot of sugar, it could, the polyphenol content could outweigh the deleterious effects of the calories delivered by the chocolate. This is actually being shown. But, you know, the problem is that you got to make it palatable.
Yes,
and
otherwise.
Many of these chocolates are, they taste sort of gritty because they're so high in the cacao.
Yeah.
And dark chocolate is, it's dark because it's roasted.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a bitter taste. People have to understand, you know, this is not where you get your sweet fix.
Right.
You're getting a chocolate fix. Whatever that's, I was never.
There's all these neurotransmitters that seem to be engendered by chocolate. You know, there's certainly maybe even aphrodisiac-like effects. But I think that needs to be worked out. I'm not sure that raw cacao is superior.
Yeah.
Because most of the studies that look at the benefits of cocoa look at cocoa polyphenols that are derived from chocolate that's been somewhat processed. Because if you look at raw cocoa, it doesn't taste good. It's green. It's it needs a lot of processing to make it into a delicious product.
Yeah, it may the roasting process may also benefit in terms of removal of any toxins like mycotoxins, aflatoxins. It's a plant. It needs some kind of processing.
Right. Yeah. So I think we need to continue more research on chocolate. And, you know, chocolate, there's no question, along with wine and coffee and tea, these are functional beverages that have beneficial properties. And, you know, if we look at the analogy of tea, you know, green tea has more EGCG, for example, than black tea. Black tea has benefits. Black tea has a lot of quercetin, which is also healthy. Some people say that white tea, which is completely unprocessed, has more of the beneficial properties.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Although it's not as popular as green.
Yeah,
or even black.
The only way that I can take tea is with, is in a capsule. You know, I just don't like tea. I'd make a lousy Englishman. All right, so this is a good point at which to pause. And we'll continue with questions. What's coming up in part two?
The differences in fish oil. What is your opinion about the ethyl ester form as opposed to the triglyceride form?
Okay,
of fish
that's
oils?
A great question. because competing brands of fish oil offer either the triglyceride or the ethyl ester form, and we'll address that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, part one.